parties, Jenkins prevails unless this committee decides otherwise. Now, Frank is caught up, like many people are, with the challenges we have around the weather. So he'll be here, but I'm told he's actually in Parliament now. But we should get going, really. The other issues, the main issues that we have are two. One is the clause that relates to the banks having to explain to any depositor or any client, whatever the word, any customer, why is it they've closed their account in terms of the clause that is there. You know, the difficulty we have there is you say may, they may do that, but I'll come to that. Ah, yes, Mr. Advocate Jenkins, we held up our meeting for a full 8 minutes. Yeah, Brendan. How old are you, Brendan? Oh, Tandi is much younger. So, strictly speaking, much younger. And she looks increasingly younger, doesn't she, Dickie? Every day she looks younger. All right, Brendan, stop interfering with our very committed, very devoted member there. Right, now then.
I want you to know that Tandi chairs...
She's having what?
Tandi chairs...
Sorry? She's having a breakfast. Ask her if she should be having a breakfast. See, Tandi thinks if she doesn't drink sugary sweetened beverages, Mr. Anikum.
Yeah.
Professor Anikum.
Yeah.
Yeah. That therefore she's behaving. Right. Right. Can we just...
But you should know that she chaired this committee magnificently.
Yes, I heard. And you unanimously decided you don't need me back. But then you all thought it'll be heartbreaking for me. So I could give you an anecdote, Derek, about somebody who was chairing with the previous committee. But leave that aside. Can we just deal with this? So the outstanding issues are the clause that says anybody. It's got nothing to do with a particular case in the public domain at the moment. It's just the committee felt it's fair. But I want to, you know, because the last time I hadn't read the documentation, Momo, and I've done all of that last night, I want to raise something that's not accurate, right? Okay, if you turn to your slides on page... Okay, let's deal with the issue. So the first thing is that clause. Then the one that is at issue is to what extent is what you have here in your alignment with the FICA Act actually an alignment, and to what extent have you deviated, and if so, why, and is it necessary? I think the majority of us feel, given the extremely difficult and challenging negotiations that are to take place around the FICA Act, it is safer to actually just stick with it. Also, I think it's also about Parliament's integrity. You see, if we do something here, people might say, for whatever reason, that what we did is we delivered this thing, the Speaker Act, and then we knew all along that there's a financial sector regulation bill where we will undermine what we've done in the FICA Act. So it's about our integrity as Parliament. So that's what I'm pleading for. It could be understood like that. Has it happened in this Parliament? As we know also well, yes. So I would really urge people, even if you have a case that's got merit, find some other way of dealing with it. But having said that, Frank is supposed to have settled this matter with you. You met yesterday, I gather, and you'll report back on that. Apart from that, colleagues, those two issues, the rest of it on the insurance bill and so on, we can each have our own views around it. It's not a major policy smash. I think we can finish in the next hour or so if all goes well, and if I don't blabber too much, starting with that. So let me start with this first. Did you meet, just for the record, Mr. Advocate Jenkins? What came out of it?
There were two or three issues which we've picked up. This is now in addition to the amendments proposed by the NCOP to get a more of a keyhole alignment with the FICA Amendment Act. That's now. And we've agreed on those. So that, in my view, Janine and Advocate Van Schoor can disagree, but I think we've reached an agreement to get that alignment as you instructed, and there's no problem with that. So I think Advocate Van Schoor is going to do a presentation, but we sorted all the issues out as far as I'm concerned. Yes, no, 100%, yes. No, we've checked. Yes. Exactly.
So I need to remind you that the first three clauses are straightforward, right? Is there anything? Oh, yes, you want to raise something else, is that right? Just put the issue on the agenda.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't going to raise it now, but if you wish me to, I would like to talk about the fees and levies approval process. Nothing more than that. Nothing more, if I may. But, Mr. Chairman, on point of clarity, we've just been given this document. We're hearing that there's some changes. Does this one contain the changes that have been agreed to? I need to know what document we're working from, that's all.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Can you just clarify? Yeah.
Explain the document.
But have we got copies of everything?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay, so there are three issues as I see it. One is the issue of the clause dealing with informing a client if you close the account. Two is the alignment with FICA. Three is the point Mr. Lees makes, Alf makes about fees and how you're going to arrive at that and levies. Right? Those are the issues for now. We can raise further issues if we have to. Good? Right. So on the processing of this, shall we, rather than look clause by clause, deal with the issues? Is that agreeable? Good. So the first issue there is the missing clauses. That's fine, right? The second issue then that emerges is the one that's on page 3 of the original text. Now, can I ask something? Since we now have a new text, shouldn't we work with the new text? Where is that now? Because I worked last night on this. That's what worries me. Now you've got another text. Because what I would prefer, let's not cover this ground again. If you have made changes to this text, that must all go onto a separate page, right? Because all our notes are here.
So just for clarity, we have prepared exactly what you've asked. So it's probably easier if we rather go with the original text. But we thought we'd circulate this in case members didn't have it.
Okay, fine.
But we're happy to work with this original text, and then we can...
It's dated 29th May, right?
It's dated 29th.
Good. So that's it. You know, our committee, how it works, Alf? We refuse to accept overnight stuff because we've done our homework, and then we must...
We actually just printed a copy
separate
of the 29th
page.
May.
So have we got a copy of the separate page?
Yes, it looks like this. I think you've been circulated.
Which one is it?
And
it's the one called Draft Financial Sector Levies Bill.
No,
obviously
it's
not.
This.
Okay, where is that one?
Yes, this is the one with revisions. So.
Is it called Proposed Changes to the FSR Bill 7 June 2017?
Yeah, so it's called Standing Committee Amendments to the Financial Sector Regulation.
No, I don't have that personally. We don't have that.
Okay, we'll organize copies. I think there might be a pile there. But MP has got those on slides, so we'll explain to you exactly.
No, we won't accept that. We need the text. We don't proceed like that. We don't make changes through slides. Do you want to adjourn and sort things out or something? What do you want to do?
We can just make copies for the members.
Well, can we do that, please? Also, you put enormous pressure on our committee section, really.
Okay.
It's not fair. Tebo is sick, so she won't be here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Janine. Chair, then maybe we should then, while Janine's... Sorry, Chair, we are a little bit understaffed on that side.
Okay.
We've had some personnel changes, you might have heard of. And so we apologize for that. But we can maybe deal with the other issue in conglomerates and then on the levies and then come back to these proposals.
All right, fine. So then let's move to the one that matters for now. Am I right to say it's page 3? Can you look at 106, colleagues? Can you look at sub 3? It's in blue there. Roman numeral 5. On that one, any comments? They covered it last week. What are the comments on this one? If there are no comments, so I take it we've come to our positions and we either fine or not fine, but the text as it is clear enough. Right, can I refer you to the factual situation, as I remember, in case this could be misunderstood. If you look at the slide presentation we got last week, if you look at page 8 of it, as it's now called, I don't know why, on 15 it says here, that during the deliberations on the FSR bill, discussions were held regarding the ability of the regulator to set standards, right, related to disclosures required when you close down somebody's account, let's say. The Standing Committee on Finance concluded that the inclusion of a standard-making power was unnecessary and should not be included. That's not what we said, because it contradicts the next point. I don't know how you people, I mean, really. Next point is, I have a subsequent discussion held with stakeholders prompted further consideration. No. As I remember it, and if you want, you can check the PMG minutes. They're probably much more accurate. We're in G26. This was it. The idea was suddenly sprung on us by Ismail Momoniat after we had raised this thing. I'd raised it informally and so on. And then Makosi was vigorously opposed to it. I was a bit surprised. I then spoke to Makosi over the phone. She must speak for the Sabion. And then she began to be less opposed to it. When we understood it, we said, look, it's not that we're opposed to it. It's too late now at this late stage to consider this clause when we're about to vote on the bill and Parliament's about to conclude. And we've decided that the NCOP must look at this thing rigorously and come back with as many amendments as they want and we'll give it considered attention, right? So we said, take it to the NCOP. If people are fine with it there and it comes back here, we'll look at it. And in principle, we're not saying no. We had initially suggested you put it in the Kofi bill. You said, no, Momo, let's put it here because it's an issue and it will be consistent with what you're going to put in the Kofi bill. So I think that's not accurate, right? So the point I want to make is, I want to stress, this thing first came from an individual on the ANC side. It was not linked to any family that's in the public domain, obviously. And initially there wasn't a warm response from Treasury, but then Treasury came on its own to the conclusion that it is correct, and that's when it came. So it wasn't so much we were opposed to it, but at the stage at which it came, and without any pre-knowledge that it was going to come. So that's it, right? So on this particular clause, is there anything people want to say before we move on? No. All right, the question I want to ask you then is a simple one, right? So maybe a silly question, but you must recall that we looked at this bill last year. And so much has happened since then, and some of us are 61 and getting old and doddery. So here we are. Under 5, just remind me, under line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Is it 4? Line 4, which starts practices and subject to the requirements of any other financial sector law or the Financial Intelligence Center Act. Just remind me, is the FICA not regarded as a financial sector law?
You want to, well, if you look at the definitions, we define what's the financial sector law. Remember FICA, so FICA is not included, so that's why you got to refer to it specifically.
Right.
And basically, remember FICA also applies to the non-financial sector, so.
Oh, yes, right, fine. Okay, that's helpful. So we're done. So in principle, we got no other issue with this one. Then on the issue of the alignment, we won't come to it because it's a text that you've got on the alignment. Is that right? We can move on. Then let's look at the last set of issues, which has to do with the insurance bill, right? And in particular, financial conglomerates, right? Firstly, I want to remind members, we are very impressed with this. This whole section on the financial conglomerates, right, as well as beneficial owners. All right. We already agreed, colleagues, to 160 sub 3 last week, right? Any other further matter you want to raise with us? Good. Then we agreed also on 160 sub 6, 160 sub 3A, 160 sub 6 is all ticked off, 160 sub 7. Those are straightforward administrative changes, right? Right. Then we said, let's look at section 9, sub 9, which is on the top of page 9 of the text, right? Now, on that one, on 9, is there any issue? Nope. So we can tick it off. Good. On 10. Right. Can I ask a question nobody else is? Very quickly. On 10, there's a reference here to section 3, 3 and 4. And despite 3, 5 of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. MP, what is the reference there? What are those clauses and sub-clauses referring to?
Policy Chair, I'm not familiar. I have to. Janine dealt with these amendments.
Okay, so we'll come back. So we can't approve of that, right? Okay, I think it's fine. It's just important for us to know. Advocate Jenkins, do you know? Can you help us with that? Back. All right, so we can't adopt that, right? Let's go to sub B. That seems straightforward. Any comments there, colleagues?
Yeah,
Nope, good. Okay. The question I wanted to ask you very quickly, right? It's a sort of typical question we ask and we forget what answer you give. On B, Roman numeral 2, right? You say you invite the entities referred to in paragraph A to make submissions on the matter and give reasonable period to do so. And then what? What happens? Do they have a right of a reply or, you know, say, look, we did this, you haven't responded?
So, Chair, let's just bear in mind why we have this section, okay? Because when you are dealing with conglomerates, you can issue a directive which can be pretty far-reaching. So these have been introduced to give the party, to get the process right. And firstly, they do have that in terms of the promotion of administrative justice. But let Janine explain the specific context. So we can't detract from the right that they have, but we just make it more specific what recourse or what the process when the notice is served, you know, the minimum rights that they sort of have. So that's the context of this. So it's sort of giving, it's making more explicit. I thought Roy explained.
That. But then the question arises, once they make submissions to you, you can just ignore them, in theory, right? You can even throw it in the waste paper bin or shred it, right? You're not required to respond to them to say, these are the reasons why we're not going to agree or whatever.
Well, that's where the promotion of Admin Justice Act comes in. And I think this is an important issue for any regulator. Yes, you do get some regulators because it often depends on the person who's there, where they would literally see these processes as just a tick box exercise. The point is that they have to show at all times that they are applying their mind. Now, it may be hard to prove that they are. You know, if someone's stubborn and they stick to whatever, they can say they've applied their mind. But certainly that's the expectation, even in terms of the way I understand the promotion of Administrative Justice Act. So there's no automatic that it's just a tick box and then they go and do what they want. But you can't write that in law. But they are expected to consider all the submissions that come in and then make it. They do have to make a judgment call, which may not be a nice decision for a certain party, say. But that's the process.
Any comments on this? Nope. Can we move on? So we're accepting B, and in theory we're accepting A, but we just want clarity on what the references are. Yes, Frank?
So those provisions in the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, sub 3 just deals with the procedure. So in order to give effect to the right of procedural fairness, and I'm just paraphrasing it in a way, the Act then prescribes you must give a permission and you must give the person that's affected an opportunity to obtain assistance and if it's necessary legal representation and to appear in person if it is possible to make the submission. So what we're saying, or what the amendment is saying, is these things will apply if the the regulator makes that determination. Sub 4 takes it further to say that you may depart if it's reasonable justifiable. And then sub 5 says if there's another procedure prescribed, you may follow that. But
I think we get that. Yeah, right. That seems fine. Is there any questions from members? No, and you're happy with it, right? So can we adopt that one then? Good. We dealt with that. Next one, colleagues, is on 162.1a. Now, here you've got, again, the straightforward matter, right? And then I'm not going to ask the same question again, right? But why is this here? Just remind us, Roy. You know what I want to say? There is a political terrain in which you're operating. If you look at these amendments, it seems like you're dealing with the application of PAJA, and you're setting out explicitly what people are entitled to. But the stream here is of protecting, if you like, the established, you know, insurance companies and so on. Now, when we do these things, yes, they are there, but we have to balance the unintended consequences often these things have for emerging new entrants and so on. So if I look at these things, the first thing that struck me last night when I put this down is that there's a consistent strain in these amendments, which is around protecting the position, if you like, and the rights, legal and other, of big players. And the question I want to put to you is, would that be a reasonable thing to say, And maybe you'll say, yeah, it's reasonable, but it's unavoidable. Yeah, that protects, let's say, what have you done in this insurance section that takes into account what black and emerging insurance companies and related parties were saying?
Yes, sure. So I'm going to go with, it is within reason, and I think, and I'll ask Unati and Jonathan to explain exactly what they expect the powers to be able to be used for. But importantly, okay, here it is. It's actually one, if we go across the page to 165.2a, these are requirements that a directive contemplated in subsection 1 may impose and include requirements with respect to restructuring the financial conglomerate in accordance with the plan submitted to the regulatory authority by the holding company. So essentially this provides the powers to the regulators to ask the financial company to restructure itself, which is quite a dramatic new power that we haven't had before. And if you're going to have that kind of power, and this is following international guidance and so forth, but we all know that banks get too big and what you kind of want to do is kind of allow them to be broken up and so that you can regulate them better, then you do need to provide for
power. You have to,
And it's an intrusive power against conglomerates. So when you talk emergent, they're hardly likely to be conglomerates like these.
Okay, any comments on that? Nope, all right, can we move on then? Can we look at 163.1a? It's straightforward to me. Right, Frank, if you've got any issues, you'll just alert us to it, right? Seems straightforward, colleagues, shall we approve of that? Good. Okay, 163.3. Any comments on that? Nope. Just one question of clarity. Did I misread this? Is it purely a tweaking of grammar or what? You see, in 3 you say, in deciding whether to impose a requirement that a holding company, right, maybe non-operating, you then say under sub A, the risks to the safety and soundness of the eligible financial arising from the other members. Isn't it the holding company? Is the holding company in line 1 and other members in sub A correct? Or is it that I'm just misreading? Remember, I don't know.
It is correct.
Correct.
So if you recall, when we discussed the reason why we have these clauses, which is actually to deal with the weaknesses the law had for African Bank, the other members of the conglomerate are actually Ellerines, would be Ellerines in this case. And so our regulators didn't have the power to take actions based on the fact that this company had a furniture subsidiary. So when we're saying arising from other members of the financial conglomerate, I guess that's an example of kind of when this might arise. So it's not actually the holding company, it's actually the other subsidiaries. And if you want to add...
So Roy is quite correct. The issue here is that there might be risks that come from other same level type of entities with the eligible financial institution. So you want to have powers to impose requirements at the holding company level on those other types of entities to mitigate against the risks that they might pose to the prudential entity, a bank or an insurer.
I think I understand the point. Alf, can you come in and help?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the word other should not be there, because by putting the word other in, you're referring to other than what? Other in the initial sentence is a holding company. And so if we just simply drop the word other, it would then make sense from the members of the financial conglomerate. It doesn't need other there, because the other implies that there are other holding companies in the membership.
You put it much clearer. See, I understand the policy last night when I was reading this, right? And I understand it even more after you and Unati spoke. That's not the issue. It's a matter of the structure of the sentence and the probable misunderstanding. But maybe you are right. So it's not about the policy. I understand that. And I understand it even better now that Unati and you explained. The question is it grammatically sound? It's not something we need to kill ourselves here. Advocate Jenkins, can you help? It's not a major dream smash. But if Alf can pick that up, it does imply that the members of Parliament may have a case.
Okay, part of it is, I guess, a problem of the of the English here, okay? But the thing is that this is other members of the financial conglomerate. So that, on one hand, the conglomerate itself is a member, right?
No.
The holding company is a member. And all the others. So you might have five members. We're saying, here's the financial institution, if any other members, so the other four, for example, pose a risk on a one.
I had said, well, I'm going to suggest to colleagues that we don't vote on the bill now. We finalize it, and then we come back at 2:45 and G26 and vote on it. That gives enough time for Frank Jenkins and myself. Oh, but you guys have got something on, eh? We can even vote after 3. The reason is, you know what happened the last time, right? I don't think we're going to have that thing. And one should be a bit cautious. The thing is, we have to vote on it today, if people are listening, or on Friday morning, or tomorrow even, because we want to go for the 3-day rule. So I was going to suggest anyway, for the comfort of Advocate Jenkins and myself, just to check all the, you know, full stops and commas are there. I was going to hope that members will agree that we vote at 2:45 or sometime this afternoon, whenever you're back. So can I suggest, instead of us sitting here, unless members feel otherwise, can Advocate Jenkins and MP and Momo sort this out? And when you come back at 2:45, just tell us what your... We're not going to have a discussion, right? It does seem slightly fuzzy, but the concept and the policy is not an issue. I think we all agree on that. It's just the wording. Okay, shall we leave it at that? Unless you've got an immediate answer.
One more time. So let's just imagine the African bank structure. So at the top is this company called African Bank Investments Limited. Underneath it is a company called African Bank.
Yeah.
For the purposes of the law, that is what we call an eligible financial institution. It then has another body that is to the right of it called Ellerines. That is the other financial institution in the group. So it is actually, you know, as Momo explained, it is the other ones we're worried about. We're not worried about it because we can regulate. We regulate it in detail. We're actually worried about the other people that might create problems, which is why we use the word, in this case, other members of the financial conglomerate.
And who may, like Ellerines.
Other than the African Bank.
And the issue here is that Ellerines is not a financial institution, so we can't, yeah. Okay.
See, the wording is an issue. You're
but
explaining a policy I think we all agree with and we fully understand. The issue is the wording. You think it's fine. Okay, let me drop it. I don't know why I raised it in the first place.
There
was something to it, I would draw it.
No,
okay,
that
fine.
Word suffices.
Yeah,
it's
fine. Okay, let's move on.
So
we are agreeing other is fine. Yeah. But it doesn't detract from the need for us to vote later, but that's something we'll discuss at the end. Ah, here comes Janine. Okay, clause 165, colleagues. Is there any issue on 2B? That's straightforward as I see it. Right, good. Let's turn to the C, Roman numeral 1 and 2. I can't see anything there, colleagues. Frank, you're fine. Right, let's move to 166. Well, we adopted B already last week, unless somebody's got a new idea. Right, then we go to sub 2. Now, in sub 2, we can look at A... Sub 2A, any issue there? Frank, you're fine, right? You raise your hands. Sub 3? Sub 4? Sub 5? So as I understand it, all we've got left now is the synergy between, and then Elf's issue, right? So, and then you're going to take us through, as you promised you would, the financial sector levies bill, right? Right. Now, let's go to the synergy between... the FICA and this bill. Now, who's going to take us through this? Is it MP or what?
Chair, so we have two quick explanations. The one is explaining, I think Momo also highlighted this last time, the difference between what we call an on-site inspection and an investigation. So Gerard, who actually is the lead from the FSB on that, will just again explain... again, practically what the differences are, because that is actually the big difference between the two pieces of legislation. Because you must remember that the Financial Intelligence Center doesn't do inspections. It does not, it's not like a banking regulator. So it doesn't go around and check that you're fulfilling your capital requirements and your prudential requirements and so forth. So we just wanted to make sure that the committee understands that is really the big difference between the two pieces of legislation. And then MP will take us through the exact changes that she and Advocate Jenkins discussed. So, Kerry, you can be quite quick if you want to.
I understand I must be quite quick. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to talk about the law or the legislation. You're probably quite sick of that by now. I'm just going to give you a little bit of a peep into how this practically works because we've been doing it for 15 years. So the on-site inspections, what's now called on-site inspections, one needs to understand that that is not a conflict environment. It's something we do only with reference to people that hold our license with regulated entities. And it's part of the supervision function of the FSB. It's a supervisory tool so that my registrars and my supervisors can make decisions on issues. That's not necessarily any talk of contraventions or anything like that. It really speaks to non-compliances sometimes, and those are usually fixed with interaction with the registrar and the supervisors. We do risk-based supervision, so it's very seldom, probably never a case of that when we do an on-site inspection that we believe there's a problem. It is risk-based, but it's not as a result of a suspicion or a belief that there's a problem. And the activity is a review or an audit type activity. So the personality that does this, the skills you need for this, is an analyst accountant type skill. That's how that happens. And that's what flows from that. Investigations on the other side is a completely different story. Firstly, there is a belief that there's a problem. There must be a reasonable suspicion to trigger the investigation going forward. Secondly, it's focused. It's very focused on a very specific possible contravention, and it could be very serious. It often amounts at some stage during an investigation to really building a case, to take enforcement action or regulatory action at a later stage. Of course, there are... very happy to say the cases where we come back and we say to the registrar there's actually nothing wrong, notwithstanding your suspicion. But then the other big difference is, of course, as I said, with on-site inspections, we're only dealing with our regulated entities. With investigations, we also do the border patrol part of it. So we also deal with unregistered operators. And that's really... quite often just another way of saying somebody has set up shop somewhere and is stealing as much money as he can from the public before somebody reports it to the FSB. So you do need the element of surprise. You cannot set up a meeting with these guys. And you do need, you can't talk about consent in this environment. It's often a case of getting a warrant of search and seizure beforehand, and it's done in a big team, and you or sometimes it, there's a high level of conflict in that environment. Completely different type of animal that does the investigation from the on-site inspection. So you have lawyers and forensic accountants and people who can work in a high conflict environment. This sometimes goes with applications against us for interdicts and all kinds of things. So it looks quite different. It has quite a different purpose. And I suppose what we really want to say to you today is that we can align on-site inspections with the FIC Act, and as far as we have to do everything in a constitutionally sound way, we can align investigations. But there are some areas that it's just not relevant. It's just not how it works. You have to align it with the Constitution, but not necessarily with how we operate on-site inspections. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Your response?
Chair, this is how we understood it yesterday in our discussions as well. So there are certain areas where, when it comes to on-site inspections vis-a-vis the FICA Amendment Bill or the FICA Amendment Act now, where there is going to be some differences. Mostly, especially in the case of on-site inspections, in fact, the powers are more toned down in the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. and I refer here to clause sub 4, section 1, or clause 132 sub 4, where we said, okay, no, this is actually going not as far as the FICA amendment bill. Other areas, there can be alignment. And I think we'll get to that when Advocate van Schoor do that. So there are certain areas. What we did yesterday is to make sure that we're not clawing certain things back that was not in the FICA bill, where there's sort of mentioned of arbitrary finalizing an opinion in the mind of an inspector to do certain things. So we try to get the gist of what the president's concerns in any case was with the FICA bill, that we don't have that arbitrary exercise of power. And using the less restrictive means to invade someone's privacy, especially when it comes to private homes, in the FSR bill. That's how we executed that thing yesterday. So I'm in any case happy with where we are. But I'm just saying it's not a carbon copy of the FICA bill.
All right, Andy.
Chair, I'm happy that this issue has been explained. You see, there was a misconception by David at that conjuncture when we were discussing the role of the inspectors and the powers they have, especially when they're doing inspections on unregistered companies. So at that point, David had a view that a warrant needs to be obtained in advance. And we said there are cases where you need an element of surprise, and it applies. Chair, I want your attention on this one, because that was the gist, and we need to resolve
thing,
it so that the
prescript
of the law is understood clearly, because there's a thin line on how people misconstrue what is inspection and what is investigation. This issue, the way it's being couched, it's legally sound in relation to what the type of inspection on an unregistered property is conducted. That's where it's not unconstitutional to have an element of surprise, because the type of people who go and do that are not your ordinary inspectors. That's how I understood it, and I paid much attention to it at that point. But because David had a worry of a political interference in properties of individuals for political gain, he thought that people can be dispensed to go and do an improper inspection, where an inspector can use their discretion at that point whether they need to an investigation. So a distinction has been made, and it's very clear as to even what type of people do such work. The inspections is done more by accountants. The investigations will be more forensic experts. So I want us to close that very well, so that everybody's on board and understand that, because that's the only part that is left that needs to be tied up. So I want to find out whether is David on board in relation to this particular one.
Mr. Vinny wants to speak anyway.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I'm satisfied with the general explanation, but I think given what happened in respect of the FICA bill, we should play safe. And by that I mean, I think we should go through each deviation. The purpose of that deviation should be explained to us. And we should satisfy ourselves both that that deviation is constitutional, and satisfy ourselves on what basis the executive claims that the clause is constitutional. I would be very interested in who provided exactly the legal opinion on that matter.
Yeah. All right, but can I just raise something? In any case, I was going to raise the same thing Mr. Menya does. What they're dealing now is with the overall approach. We'll have to go through every clause like we've done. In any case, we have no choice. You can't pass a bill unless you've gone through every clause. Point one. Point two is, I understood them to say last week, although I agree with Tandy, but I think you did say you spoke to Jeremy Gauntlet, remember? And I take it that's what happened, right? And that he said it's all constitutionally sound, even though it's complementary. So basically, I think that answers that. Now, looking at it at a general level, is there any member who wants to ask any other question before we come to each clause? Yes, Tandy.
I'm not asking a question. I want David to understand the general application of the law. It's very, very important
for him to understand the general application of the law. No, Chair, you see, no, I'll explain to you. You see, when we legislate and there's a perception that there's an intent, you see what makes him to, what exposes him, he asks a question of who advised. So he tells you that at the back of his mind, he carries suspicions.
He always does.
No, but that's not how you legislate.
What do you mean? No, I can't resist this, right? You know that one day when we postponed the
Chair, you see, I need to be paid extra for doing extra.
For David and so on, remember? So, I mean, really, you know, it was this fellow and me and what's his name, Cindy. So this guy, I mean, this member of parliament is going to be... Why have you made it your evangelical duty to cause him to change?
I want him to be wiser, Chair.
Ah, that's a good one. Can we mandate you as the study group to work on that? And we wish you well. The prospects of world proletarian revolution are greater than your achieving that goal. But nevertheless, go for it. All right, look, I think at a general level we more or less agree that there seems to be a case at this stage. But as for the specific clauses, we will now look at them. Is that okay? Good. Shall we start? Now, in this case, we look at this document, right?
Chair, so what we've just given you, if you go to page 2...
Of what you've just given us.
Yeah, the blue is the new changes, and MP will explain those to us.
Where's the blue? Ah, at the bottom of page 2.
Bottom of page 2.
It's a very small print. Yet again, we have this problem. Who does this sort of thing after we keep raising this with you? The person who's done this, Momo, you should sort them out, really.
Chair, this might actually be the government printer.
Sorry?
This is the government printer's font, unfortunately.
Yes, but it's fine. Okay, well, fine. What? What, reduce the size of the font? I find it hard to believe. I do track changes all my life. It does not. I printed all that. But that's my job outside of this finance. What do you think I do all my life? Right? So I think it's nonsensical. I'm just editing right now, last night. Right? So anyway... Actually, it's. Let's agree on this, right? Once again, you must not bring documents to us unless they're exceptional circumstances on the morning that we sit. Two, is these people are human beings too. Three, if you have problems, speak to your DG about your personnel changes. Four, I will contact your minister and speak to him if I have to. Can we just sort this out? Okay, right. Now, yeah. The one we're working on is 29th of May, my brother. We haven't been working on that. I don't know where that comes from.
The chair, to be perfectly clear, what's in red is what we've been talking about all along to date. And what is in blue is only what we're discussing today.
It's very confusing. Can we just get some direction?
I'm
very confused. No. Momo, can you hold on, please?
These are additional.
Yeah, no, Roy, don't complicate life. Can we withdraw all documents that are not relevant, right? I mean, why? Who does this? Once again, who does this? Who sanctioned this printing? We only have one document. Yes, Tandi.
It might not be as confusing as all of us might think. Based on last week's meeting, the blue will be effecting changes that were discussed in that meeting. That's how I understand it. So
that's not the issue. The issue is we have two separately dated documents.
Yeah,
as far as I know, there's only one document we have. It's dated the 29th of May. This is the document worked on. There's no other document. Tandi, no, look, we haven't got time. The second one is a document dated... 7th of June 2017, it's yellowed. There's a yellow block across it. That's all. There's no other document that's legitimate. And once again, we appeal to Treasury not to distribute documents that are not relevant. It causes a lot of confusion. This happens all the time. These are the only two documents. We had problems before on this very bill. Can you please do
something? Can you allow me?
No, it's not fair.
No, can you allow me to explain?
What about?
ELF is having an old document.
Where did that come
he
from?
He brought his old documents from that we received from the meetings. The document that effects changes is the one written the 7th of June. That's why the new blue shaded thing highlights what we were discussing last week.
No, I'm aware of all of that.
So he refers to an old document. It's not like it's been distributed. We don't have it in front of us.
Fine. Okay, can we move on? Right. Can we look at the 7th of June document, right? It's the one that has got amendments in blue. Is that right? Is that right? Now, where's the red amendments you're talking about? Do you have blue and red? Because I only have blue. I know.
This one's got, can you see the color red and the color blue?
Yeah. Where's red? Oh, yeah.
But then he says last week's document. Now the changes that are made on last week's document.
I can't see the red, but it's okay. It may be my eyesight problems, but where's the red here? Where's the red?
This is red.
All right, can somebody help with this thing? Can somebody co-chair? Because I can't do this, man. I won't be able to do this. Tandy, I can't see this. Yes, okay, there's nothing wrong with the document, but I can't help it if I can't see it, okay? Yeah, and also it's not fair. I've been chairing meetings for years and years, right? We've never had this problem before. So something's happened to my eyesight between yesterday and this morning. Yeah. Carolyn, can you just sit here? So what is the red now?
Okay, the red, we've actually discussed the red already. We're only discussing the blue.
When you say we've discussed it, what do you mean? We've approved of it? Or
yes, you approved.
Where did these amendments come from?
Those were all the amendments we've been discussing up to now. Yeah, it's a further.
Yes, the ones we approved last week, it's ticked off here on this document.
Yeah.
Can I just draw your attention to that? Right, these are the ones we agreed to under... Yeah, go back to the 29th of May document, right? Right. So you look at page 8, right? Address, no, it's not page 8, sorry. Can we go to page 4, right? And here, we agreed to none of them, from what I can see, right? None of them. The only one we agreed to was on page 6, where 6A we agreed on the THE, right, obviously. So that's the only one we agreed to last week, right? According to my records.
Yes.
Right. Now, coming back to the document here that you've just given us, 7th of June.
Yeah.
Can I just get some clarity? Now, when you say we approved of these changes, we couldn't approve them last week. We only approved the one last week, according to my notes.
No, Chair, we approved some of them this morning. But I think what if we go through from 132 onwards, if we go through those...
You have done now, I see, you have done is not what normally Parliament does. You have done the whole document again and given it to us, rather than just the section dealing with... Oh, I see. Now it is not making sense because that's not the way Parliament works, right? Right, this... Yeah, Derek, can you give me a chance, right? If the majority of the committee wants this change, then it has to be something you have to put to a chair. The thing is, the way Parliament works is that we have a separate, and the way we've agreed from July 2014 to now, Derek, you may have a better idea, but I am perfectly correct on this thing, right? Which is, once again this morning I said, any amendments you make have to be on a separate page. So this is not a separate page. This is a later version of the 29 May document. That's what it is. Fine. Now I understand. So this is a new way you're operating. So can you discuss that with me? Right? Then I will raise it with the committee. But you have to allow a chair to do his or her job. I had to sit last night and work on that document. We have a system that we've agreed on. Now you have decided to change the system. You should at least confer with me the night before. That's all I'm saying. Because members here may think that things just fall into place here. No, no, no. There's a lot of work a chair has to do before it comes here. So I think in fairness, you should give a chairperson some latitude, and then if the chairperson is behaving in a way that's unreasonable, as a majority you can outrule him or her. So what I'm saying is this is not the way we operate. You've introduced a new system now. Okay, fine. All we wanted was the page that deals with the separate amendment, because we have to approve on it. You see, somebody has to check this, Mr. Derek Hanekom, and I will have to do this between now and quarter to three. It's a lot of work, actually. Because this is the document we're working with. Any changes should only be on a separate page. Well, actually, if it's going to help processing, can I ask members, if you've got a proposal, will you assist me? Members, after today, any proposal you make now, you come and assist me. Right, go for it, Tandi.
I want you to have an opportunity to look at this. Our groups are just embracing between us all. And you
That's not the issue. And also, we must vote on this thing today because we want to avoid a three-line work. But can we just then proceed and look at what page? Page? What page are we looking at now in the new document?
Bottom of page 2, Chair.
Right, we're at the bottom of page 2. This is the right, previously you had a subheading called alignment with the financial sector. You've dropped that, right? Okay, fine. Now, on clause 132.
Chairperson, is this not a clause dealing with on-site inspections? And in our discussions with Edgar Jenkins yesterday, we picked up that there's two aspects that's not similar to the FIC. And that's where you obtain consent from the, in the case of a private residence. In the case of FIC, we require both the occupant and the person apparently in control of the business suspected to be conducted at the private residence. So we propose to add that requirement. And then we also add the possibility we only enter a part of the private residence, which is possible, for instance, a flat at the back of the property, etc. So that's the proposed change to 1321. And we added paragraph A and B just to split it up. And this is the way it is for inspections in the FIC Act.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, MP. Thank you very much. I mean, just on the surface of it, it looks fine. But what I'm battling with is I don't have the FIC to look at. And there's probably no exact same clause, perhaps, in FIC. I don't know. I'm not able to say, yeah, I can see that it's not the same as FIC. I'm having to accept what we're being given. And that's obviously up to me to go and do my homework later if necessary.
Let me be in fairness, right? We had agreed that we would mandate Frank Jenkins. I personally spent about 2.5 hours going through all of this. I checked all the cross-references of the Financial Sector Regulation Bill, but I did not check the cross-references of the FICA Bill because one's human. And quite frankly, I trust Advocate Jenkins. So I am not going to do that, and there's nothing in the rules that say I must do it. So I won't be doing it. I'll take it that Frank has done it. But if you want time for that, we can adjourn now and come back. It's your right. But I really trust Frank, and I've been working with him for 2.5 years. Maybe you can give Mr. Lees a copy of the FICA Bill, FICA Act as it now is.
I don't think I'm capable of doing this.
You want some time to do the comparison? Okay. So in that case, what I suggest we do is we reconvene tomorrow morning. That gives you the night, and we vote on the bill tomorrow. In fairness, Dave, sorry?
Face value, or whatever word he used, it looks good.
he just is a bit concerned because he hasn't had that opportunity. Why don't we go through all of them? And then he can go back, he can find 10 minutes. That comparison is not going to take you long, it's going to take you 5 minutes. Yeah, he can point, if he points to you the relevant clause in the FICA bill or the Act. But we don't have to reconvene tomorrow for him to just have a look at that.
Can I just speak? And can people listen? Look, I'm saying that to the extent he's got a difficulty with this clause, there may be others that are pending, right? Right. And then he can have some time to look at it. It's his right. Right. Now, I'm saying simply, he already told me, and this committee last week, that he and Brendan, and I think well, it is day two, have to go at 12:30, is that right? To some place. And you won't be available. So if we're going to meet at 2:45, it will not give him enough time to check. But if it can be done, let's get it done. So in other words, what I'm simply saying is we are proceeding. But to make him feel at ease, and nobody is being bludgeoned, or this is the way this committee operates, at least while I'm here. I'm not saying the next chair that comes in tomorrow morning can has to operate. But here it is, the way we've been operating is everybody must be given a chance. Right? And so if we're going to proceed, but he has the right to say, Eunice, as a DA, we would like to check. Now, given the sensitivities around the FICA Act, which you might be or might not be privy to, I think fine, there's no problem. The three-day rule requires that by Thursday lunchtime we must have voted, right? Because that gives you 3 days, depending on when we vote next week. So it's not the end of the... We've done it before. In fact, often we've come on a Thursday and voted, right? So, Derek, if we've done this before, if we want to change those things, fine.
If we go through clauses, we'll know which are the clauses that he would like to have time, not bludgeoning him. Then we know exactly it's this one, and that one might already be this one. We don't know.
Option. So he doesn't have to feel under pressure. That's all I'm saying. We may not need it.
I'm not speaking to that. Chair, 1321A. The person apparently in control of the business. Apparently. I think we want to be clear that the person who is in control. Because if you say apparently, you assume that that person might be in control and might not necessarily be in control. So I'm not sure why did we put apparently there when we wanted to say in control. Because you are putting yourself in a safe corner to say, no, apparently we're giving an impression that this person is in control, but then we learn later that this person was not in control. And then you are subjecting this clause to speculation and different interpretations in a court of law.
Anything else on that clause people want to raise? Yes, Brandon?
I just want to say I understand the use of the word apparently. Because, you know, often you afterwards a director could come and say, but you gave it to the manager, but he wasn't in control. So I know it's not ideal, but I understand why they have to use the word apparently, because when you arrive at a premises, somebody's going to meet you at the front door and say, what are you doing here? No, you can't come in, or whatever the case might be. So that person is apparently in control if he's trying to bar your entrance or whatever. So I don't know if there's a better word, but I understand why they need to use the word apparently.
All right, do you want to respond, my friend?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's entirely correct, Mr. Chairman. The problem we have is that there's a person, and I understand the issue, it's a bit vague, but you arrive at the premises and there's a person who's clearly in control of the premises, and you hand the warrant to him, or you do whatever you need to do to him or her. But then 2 months down the line, in the interdict or in the application to have it set aside or whatever, suddenly it turns out that was not the person in control, it was actually somebody else, which is just an opportunistic way of trying to get the evidence out. So I think we are just trying to cover that arena to say we can lead factual evidence by the inspector that when he or she arrived on the scene, this person was in control. Whether that was legally the case is another story, and we don't want to get tripped up by that. Perhaps apparently is not the best word, but we do need a word there to plug that hole, so to speak.
Tandi, Derek?
Precisely why I have a problem with when you actually get permission for a person who you assume was in control or has given you an impression that they were in control, and then you are taken for litigation and the case is thrown out of court because that person is playing dumb and saying, I was just responsible for managing this business during the day, but I'm not in charge. So I had no legal basis of giving you the right for inspection. So I was not sure. I don't know, Advocate Jenkins is here. I might be pulling it too far in terms of legal implications that might arise and defeating the intention of the inspection. I don't know. I need legal advice, but I like stretching my mind. So I like to play safe, especially when people misconstrue the role that you want to play when we're doing inspections. Some assuming that it's searches and wanting to have a legislation that actually passes constitutional muster. I don't know. Let's hear what Advocate Jenkins will say on this one.
Derek?
Well, I mean, obviously there's always danger of legal challenge, and you want to cover your back as much as possible to reduce the possibility of legal challenge. But how about, and so the apparently is trying to do that, but how about saying the person in control or apparently in control? So that you're not saying, well, it, by necessity it's going to be somebody apparently in control. It may not. That's a proposed change here.
Is the Advocate Jenkins?
Chair, the wording that's suggested is carbon copy of the FICA amendment bill. So we just followed that, and that's in fact, I suggested that to Advocate von Skoor yesterday. Why don't we just use exactly what's in the FICA bill, which says that person apparently...
All right, can I just suggest we just use what's in the FICA bill? Please, Derek, understand, I can brief you outside this meeting. Okay.
No, I was just going to say it's exactly as in the FICA bill, and the lawyers and so on have all been behind this.
Point covered, MP. Can I just read something? I have to attend a parliamentary budget office meeting, but this is more important. I would like us to finish by 12:45, but if I don't, then Tandi, can you chair? Because there's very little I've got. I've got no role now. We're more or less done, yeah. Okay, let's see where we go. Very well, because you know this bill very well. And better, as Derek would say.
Chair, the next change is to clause 137. I just need to check on which page it is, but it's at the beginning. It's on page 4 of the document. The change is to...
On page 3, you put some things in blue, like under 3B. Now, when I look at the document that has a bigger font, you know, the one you gave us last week, that one, we haven't ticked this off, so can we just get agreement now? Are we agreeing with these changes on page 3, 3B, conducting the supervisory on-site? Oh, you're distinguishing the term, right? So... I think that's fine. Anybody got any question? Yeah, supervisor. So can we approve of those, please? Okay. Right. Then the next one?
On page 4, clause 137. The first change is the removal of the word at any time. Now... This is actually contradictory because later in 1374 we already say you must enter at a reasonable time. And also in the FICA bill we say at a reasonable time. So we propose that we take it out there in the beginning of 1371A. And then the next change is the same change that we made now, because this is now inspections, investigations. The same change we made for inspections to add where you enter with consent that it's also the person in apparent and control of the premises and the occupant. So that's the other change to clause 137 that we are proposing.
Yeah, Tandy.
Yes. It's the same. We're actually pulling through whatever amendments we made to inspections, also the investigations, in line with FICA.
Three, some procedural point before you speak. Tandy, if you look at the document of 29th May, we did not approve of many of the changes that we are now taking that we approved, simply because, you see, now Orlan's notes is on this page. When I plead with members that we're going about this the wrong way, people are getting irate, okay? It's not fair, really. We are presupposing, we haven't agreed to a single amendment last week. Now, if you look at the notes I have here, and you look at this, what we are now doing, can I tell you what I think we're doing, which is completely wrong, as far as I know it. What we are doing is, we are looking only at their current blue, right? Is that right? We are presupposing that we agreed to the red, yet we haven't. Nobody wants to listen. Can you help me? Nobody wants to listen. They think I'm being cantankerous, right? One member in particular is getting irate, I can see it. But it's not fair. No, just do what Parliament is supposed to do. Yeah, I've tried. Is to bring a set of amendments. You see, also, it is not fair. I spent 3.5 hours. There's so many questions I've got on the what is now the red and was the blue last week. All these questions here, look at here. I can't ask them because we're not looking at them. Because the committee has decided to look at this document and think the chairperson is cantankerous. He's got up, maybe the weather has affected him, or maybe he went to bed very late. It's fine. But you see, that's how I feel. I'm feeling under siege, right? Yet, from 1998, I've chaired committees. This is the way we've done it. You have the right, Roy, you have the right, Momo, to propose a better system. In which case, approach me last night and inform me, say we want to change the system, and I would say, fine. Now, right now, you know what we are doing? We are not voting on the amendments we had last week. We are only voting on the amendments to the amendments last week. But that's what the committee wants to do? Fine, let's do it. But I've got a lot of questions here. No, that's what you're saying.
I even suggested that let's break so that this can be done the way you need it to be done. And you didn't listen to me when I said so.
No, there's a simple thing as a way out in saving time, which is to go back to the 29th of May document, look at the blue ones, and then what we asked you to do, Janine, the one that you've changed, put it on a separate page. How long will it take you to do? In the meanwhile, we can go ahead, can't we? Only the ones that you've amended yesterday. So can I make it simple? Amendment 1 came last week. Amendments 1 came last week from the NCOP. Amendments 2 came last night, and we got it this morning. On Amendments 1, we must approve of it and then look at Amendments 2 on the separate page, as we've been doing for 15, 18 years that I've been around, right? Now, Janine, can I ask you a practical question? Is it not possible to take Amendments 2 and put it on a separate page and give that to us? Where there are no Amendments 2, we can approve of Amendments 1. Am I making any sense? Ellen, can you help me, please, man? I'm trying desperately. Are people understanding what I'm saying? Oh, you do now. Okay. Well, I was unclear earlier. So can we do that? And to be fair, right, Lyndon, look at the sizes. Can you come and look? There's nothing stopping them from using the same size as last week. It doesn't follow that if you do tracking that the size of the font falls. Here, I can prove it to you. Look at the 29 May document and look at the 7th of June document. If I say that, people don't want to agree. So I thought I'll take Derek for tea and show him because he thinks I'm being cantankerous, right? No. Right, so can we just do what we always do and then you can come with another proposal on the rates and monetary bill. Maybe your proposal is a better system. We need to change. Okay. Derek, I need to also alert you. We started the tracking system for the first time, which was put on the agenda in 2007. We did it, and guess what happened? Three of these amendments fell away. It was very embarrassing. The DA saw a conspiracy in it. There was no conspiracy. It was human error. We forgave the person, right? But we learned from that process. I've spent 4 hours since then discussing with various parties how we can avoid this mistake. But Parliament is going to move on to a new tracking system. They've agreed on it, right? And at the end of this year, it's going to happen. So a lot of work gets done outside the committee. Now, what I'm pleading for is, why don't we just do our job properly, right? So let's look at the blue of the 29th of May document. Advocate Jenkins, There are some that are amendments to. You'll tell us, no, we got amendments to, we drop it. Janine, can you extract those amendments and put it on a separate page? Right, then we can proceed. So can we then turn, as we should, to page 4 of the 29th of May document and then see whether we approve? You'll see it in blue. Now, on 132.1, are there any amendments to it?
Yes, Chair.
What we could do is look at the amendments to, first, how should we treat both together? So our main document is back to 29th of May. Alf, are you following?
I am following.
Yeah. Right. David, are you on board? Right. So 29th of May. Now, what we have here, you've amended how? Can you tell us? That will be the blue, new blue now.
Is it the amendment is to 1321A? Inserting the requirement to get the permission of the person apparently control of the business, and then also to add after the occupant of the private residence also part of a private residence.
Now this one we've covered, right? And we are in agreement, except you want some time to look at it, right? Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
We went through carefully the differentiation between an investigation and an inspection. So inspection, we were told, was very much like FICA, no problem there. This clause is about investigation, am I right? Am I wrong? It says powers of investigation. Oh, that's 137, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. Okay, no, then I'm answered myself, thank you.
Mr. Chair, just want to confirm the way I understand it. The blue are the changes that have been brought about when they compared it with the FICA. So the red was last time, which we were told it was in basically in line with the spirit of FICA. Then they went away, and they've compared it, and then they made the blue changes. That's what I understand it to be, but if
blue. Right, you see the complications, right? All this could be avoided. Right, blue 1 and blue 2. Blue 1 are the NCOP amendments, blue 2 are the amendments 2, okay? So we're working on blue 1 as amended by blue 2. Does that make sense?
No.
Then can you help us out?
No,
help us out. You're getting very annoyed with me, but I am cantankerous, I agree, but not on this occasion. Okay, right. Hey, all this could be.
Back to the
yeah. Yeah.
All the changes in
this. Okay, now have been made by the NCOP. First committee is looking at the changes made by the NCOP.
Yes.
Right? So, your first issue is if we get to 132. What you ask is, do you agree with this change of the NCOP?
Yeah.
What you asked us to do is you want us to check that the changes the NCOP made is exactly as in the FICA bill. Okay. So what we're going to do is most of these changes are like the FICA bill, but not all. And that is what MP is now going to point you to.
Yeah.
And that's your second blue that you had in the today's document was meant to be the changes against the NCOP version. So I guess what you are asking the committee, the way I see it, is here's what the NCOP proposed. Are we happy with it? But as you're doing it, you're asking us, is it exactly like the FICA bill? And we can come on every clause and say, no, this is what MP and Frank have met, and this is the addition they want. That's what we're doing now.
Explanation of what we're doing, right? There's another thing just to explain to people. I will have to sit with Charles and tell him why we amended the NCOP amendments, in fairness. If he wants, we can write him a report, and he can table it in his committee. It's only fair. We ask them to have public hearings. We ask them to seriously apply their mind, in fairness to the chairperson of that committee. I'll have to go and explain to him. So, we are dealing with blue 1 and blue 2. Is that a simple explanation?
Yeah. Very simple, but just on your comment about Charles, the amendments proposed by the NCOP, and let's just look at 132.1. They now have disappeared, but they're not in red crossed out. So just go to the main section of 132.1 as it arrived from the NCOP. You'll see with prior notification to the supervised authority entity, etc., etc. That's nowhere to be seen in the new version, either as a red crossed out at all. It's gone. It's disappeared.
Pick that up. And I just gave up because I thought this is what the committee wants to do, but actually that's what was frustrating me, that you have removed words completely, right? Your argument is that because this is what you had from the NCOP is not consistent with what is there in the FICA bill, or FICA Act, right? That is why you removed it. Now, it is perfectly legitimate for us to do that. Is that right, Advocate Jenkins? Because we can amend an amendment that came from the NCOP. But we cannot amend a provision that the NCOP has not already amended. Correct? Right. So it's constitutionally and legally sound. But the question that arises, exactly the question I have, which is what Alf is asking. So can you explain that more clearly? Which is why we have to start with the 29th of May document and then look at the 7th. Document 1 and Document 2. Blue 1 and Blue 2. Call it what you will. Now we are clear, okay? Brandon, Blue 1 is 29th of May. Blue 2 is 7th of June. Document 1 is 29th of May. Document 2 is 7th of June. That's clear. Now, can you answer that question, Frank? Can you help us? Because you are the guy who's speaking on behalf of Parliament.
With what, Chairperson?
With Alpha's question, that you've completely removed that which you had from the NCOP.
But has it not just moved down with Mr. Lee? It moves down and conduct a supervisory on-site inspection of this. It just moved down. If you look at the 7th of June document right at the end of page 2, it's there. But, I mean, it's confusing. Let me... Chairperson, I got that.
Wonderful work. No, it's not funny, actually. It's not funny. Where is it? Where is it, Derek? Can you help us?
Which one are you looking at? I've got both
of them. Right, document 1 and document 2. Which one you want us to look at?
In both. Look at document 2, 7th of June, 132, subsection 1, third line.
Line 3 in document 2, in 132.1, reads, to the supervised entity, and if the business premises of a supervised entity is a private residence with a prior agreement of. So what you're referring to?
No,
then, you're looking at the wrong document then. What is it dated? The one we've got is different. Momo, what have you done here?
He's looking from the end of line 2.
Okay, you know what I suggest, if the members agree? We only look at the 29th of May document where there are no amendments to. And then we come back to amendments 2 when we have a separate sheet of paper. I think Janine's going to do that. Would that be agreeable, Derek and others? Might make it easier. Sorry, you don't have what copy? I can't hear you. Can you speak into the mic, please? Oh, that we can't help with because, I don't know if the committee secretary can help with that. Look, the 29th of May document, is that agreeable? That's the only reasonable way to proceed. And Janine will be here shortly, so I don't think it's a train smash now. We are where we are. Let's move on. Am I right that Janine's going to do that, Mom?
Yes.
So we will get a separate page. All right. So can you help us then? Let's not vote on 132.1. On 132.3 is the other amendment you made. Now, on this one, all you've done, from what I can see... All right. Firstly, on 132.3a... Are there any comments on that? Have you made any amendments to this?
No, not from yesterday's.
Yeah.
No.
So that we can vote on, right? Okay. So 132.3a. I couldn't see anything. Anybody's got any issue there? So can we approve of that? Unless people have got an issue. Okay, in that case, can we approve of that, please? So we're approving of 132.3a on the 29th of May document, right? Yeah. Sorry, Derek?
No,
oh, fine. Okay, 132.3b. All you've done here is put in exactly the words that are in the FICA Amendment Act. Is that right, Jenkins? Okay, so can we vote on that? Good. Right. 132.4. Roman numeral 1. That's the NCOP, am I right? What is that? Yeah. Can I ask... On 132.4a, Roman numeral 1, any questions? I don't see anything. Anybody else see anything? Can I just ask, would you say on the premises or in the premises? Make extracts from the copy of any business documents on the premises or in the premises? What is it, MP? Sorry? Does it really matter? That's okay, Jenkins. Does it matter? It doesn't really matter, man. I think in is more colloquial, but you want to stick with on. Why is there such like a befuddlement? It's either on or in. Or maybe either. On. Fine. Okay, on it is. Let's vote on that. Fine. Next one. You've changed control and charge, right? Go to double A at the bottom of page 4, 29th of May document, control and charge. Right. Explain why this changed quickly.
Chair, the language is the same as in FIC, because there we use the term control. Sorry, in the FIC we talk about the person apparently in control of the premises. So it's just alignment of language.
Okay, good. That's clear. Can we approve this, please? On the next page, there's another few there. Can we approve of that? Can we approve of that? Can we go to 135.1? Have you changed this in Amendment 2?
No.
So can we vote on that? Okay, any questions there on 135.1a and b? No. I did the cross-referencing, Frank. I may have got it wrong, but, I did check the cross-referencing with 251.3. I've checked it already, and you're fine with it, right? Okay. Can I just ask, though, when you're referring to a person suspects that a person, that's a legal person, right? Or is that an individual? 135.1a, reasonably suspects that a person may have contravened, maybe contravened. Is that?
It could be a legal or natural person.
Yeah, in that case, it all includes a legal person. Good. Next one, 137a, Roman numeral 1 is straightforward. Any questions? Nope, we can approve of that. Sorry, did you change here?
Yes.
Okay, so we can't vote on this one, this whole one, right? So in other words, we can't vote on 137 as a whole?
No, only 137.1.
Okay, so can we vote then on, when you mean 137.1, you mean up to, up to page 6, halfway the page, where 2 begins. Is that the whole thing?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, so that one we can't vote on, right? So 137. Can you please note, researchers and so on, which one, so we don't forget, right? Then we go to, colleagues, we go to the middle of page, the first third of page 6, okay? Sub 2, can you find it, colleagues? Right. Here, have you made any changes?
No, Chief.
No. Right. On this one, I think it's fine. It's consistent with what you got in the FICA Amendment Act, right?
Yes.
Good. Thank you, fine. Good. So you're adopting that, right?
Then what do you mean? Yeah. Because there's a new word, supervisory, included, into,
where?
Included there. Under clause 140. Page 6.
Yeah, page 6. Where are we, my friend?
There's a new word there, supervisory.
Where about the supervisory? I'm sorry. Which subsection?
Chair, in the new document, there's a blue...
in the new... We're not looking at the new document. You mean, there is a change there?
No, Chair, that was in the document, the 29 May document. We didn't change that.
We didn't change that. Okay. Right, then we can adopt 137 sub 3 and 4. Right, 4. Now, can I ask a question here? Any colleagues got any questions? Nope. Can I ask a question here? Under 4B, you've got 1A, 2, and then you've got small b and small c, right? And you also have a big double B and a big double C, right? And you are referring to the small b and the small c. It seems right to me. MP?
Subsection 4B.
Yeah, 4B. In the case
the
of
cross
the search.
References.
Yeah.
Yes.
they are right, see? Yeah.
This is where the distinction between inspection and investigation, I think, might be apt, appropriate. Here we're talking about investigations. Clause 4. Am I right or wrong? Am I reading it correctly? Derek, perhaps you can tell me. Smile, Derek.
That's a good swipe and snipe.
It's in good
and deservedly so.
It's in good humor.
Even though he's my comrade.
So the question then, if I'm right, we talked, well, we're going to get the separate sheet of the...
Yeah, promise.
But that's not going to include any changes to this clause.
No.
And so the question then is there a deviation from FIC in this clause because it's an investigation, not an inspection?
Yeah.
You meant to alert us to all deviations and why?
Gee, what the sheet is not going to show you, there's two areas which I had on the presentation where there is a deviation, but we are explaining why it's justified. So I think we may need to come, I don't know if you want to deal with it now.
No, we only need
to deal with it if it derives directly from the document 1. When you come to document 2, you can tell us what the wording is and why it's a deviation. So far, we've taken it that everything you've done here is not a deviation from FICA. If it is, you have to explain to the committee why.
There is a deviation which the honourable member pointed to.
Yeah. Why?
In 137.1, there is provision for inspector without a warrant, without consent, and without internal authority to enter premises. And that possibility is not in FICA. It was a proposal that was considered, but our view was it's not necessary in the FIC context for inspections. But in the case of investigations on the FLSSR, which includes possible criminal allegations of criminality, our view is that it's necessary that you may, without delay, the inspector will have to enter. Otherwise, they may destroy evidence or otherwise frustrate the investigation. So that's why we're proposing that we still have this in the FSR bill.
Okay, Tandi?
Chair, whilst I agree with this one, there's inconsistencies with how you change these clauses. The document that you provide today, you just removed in 137A, 1A, any time. when it's actually the same principle that must apply when they must enter. If they enter, they should be able to enter any time because those are investigators, they're not the inspectors. So be consistent with how you apply the principle so that it applies the same. Because if you prohibit an inspector to enter any time, but you give them powers to enter, really, what are you trying to achieve? So I'm just giving you, by the time we come back to 137.1a, reconsider reinserting any time. Because it's consistent with the principle that you are suggesting now, which I agree with personally.
Mr. Mania.
I just want to confirm that I understand it correctly. So in respect of this deviation, you're saying that an investigator may, with relevant qualifications, enter a premises without a warrant, even if that premises is a private residence. And then you argue that that is constitutional in the light of the president's reservations about that matter. It doesn't add up to me.
You see, Chair, and that's the intervention I made earlier on. When David reads into the law, he doesn't read the whole sentence, what it means. It says, it always says you get permission from the person in control, who's in charge. That's why we're debating the word apparently and so on. So he reads it and cut it into pieces and leave out, because you don't just enter, you have permission, because you explain. Even an inspector explains to a person why they are there and what they are looking for. You don't just rock up and say, I'm here to check, and then you don't even get permission, you just go. It doesn't work like that in real terms.
Okay, can you reply, MP?
Yes, that's what's contained in the law. That you can enter private residence in the circumstances I described without warrant, consent or internal authority. But the advice that we received for the FIC one included the possibility of inspector simply on his or her own judgment make that call. But we sit in the case of the FIC inspection, so...
Can I urge members, I wanted to say this at the beginning, let's not open up debates that we resolved in the FICA Amendment Act, okay? We all didn't agree, even within the same party, on some of those provisions. But this is not the space and the time and the opportunity to open up those. That will be very unfair. So, the issue before this committee is, do we agree with the deviation or not? That's all. It's not opening up. Otherwise, we're back to square one. Now, before you speak, Tandi, and anybody else, I want some help, technical help. Advocate Jenkins, can you guide us on the parameters within which we have to treat these amendments? And in this particular case, of this particular clause, answer that in the first place. In this particular case, in this particular clause, what are the parameters of treating it, or attending to it, or amending it, or debating it even?
Chair, I think the first issue which you discussed earlier is the changes that the NCOP are proposing on document one in blue. Those are the changes that brings it in line with the FIC. So you can look at anything there, the whole thing, if you like, the whole subclause one which we are dealing with now. Insofar as the committee wants to make it aligned with the FIC, National Treasury correctly pointed out that small CC with the investigator, without going to its supervisor, can also enter. But it's not an arbitrary entering. It must be on reasonable grounds. So there can be a judicial inquiry, a judicial review of the exercise of that power. And if the power was exercised unlawfully, whatever was collected in that exercise would not be admissible in any kind of format. So the whole exercise would have been unlawful. So the committee decided to make it align with the Financial Intelligence Center Amendment Act. The committee can look at that and say, we don't want that in there. It goes further than what is necessary or that was required. keeping in mind the discussion that Treasury and the FIC has given to say, sorry, I don't know if you are you from the Financial Intelligence Center? Oh, the FSB. The FSB, they might be able to, and I don't want to manage it, but the FSB might be able to shine light on why an inspector must have it. I know that the Financial Intelligence Center said at the time, we don't need that. So that's a policy issue. But you can do anything with this clause which you like.
I know, I'm not asking you to advise us on policy. I'm advising us on the consistency between the FICA Act Amendment Bill, FICA Amendment Act, and what we've got here. You can table the policy issue for us, but the consistency. You presumably agreed with this deviation, because otherwise it wouldn't be here. And why? That's my point.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%, I understand it. The substance of it, and it includes the issue of enter any premises at any time. It's more problematic than honorable member has indicated. Not just that it's inconsistent with sub 4, but it's an issue that the Constitutional Court has highlighted to say that that affects dignity. You can't just come in when you want to. So it's an important matter. When we discussed this yesterday, I'm talking only about the 137.1. It is aligned to Financial Intelligence Center, carbon copy, if I can use that word, except for small CC. The discussion around that was National Treasury must explain to the committee. They explained to me why it should be left in there. I thought, well, it's a policy issue. It makes sense. If there's a need for it, there's a specialist that will have to explain why there's a need for it. I mean, you can convince me, but that's not going to help because it's not a legal issue. And that's where we left that discussion yesterday.
All right. Okay, do you want to respond? And then Tandy can come in and help. All right, fine, whatever. But the point is that I'm concerned that we are raising issues that we've discussed already in the FICA Amendment Act. And I once again return to this thing that I think it's just safer to jettison all these deviations. But the committee doesn't feel the same way. What must I do, Tandy? I think we should just jettison them, frankly. I don't know why we're allowing this. You must come with another amendment somewhere else, right? But nobody wants to listen, so I'm just a mere chairperson. My job is to facilitate, right? You guys as a majority will decide. So, Tandy, Alf. No. No, Tandy insists that we must hear her and Alf first, so let's do that. Now, don't be intimidated by it, but I'm just worried where we are going with this thing. Okay, Brandon, Elf.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we all agree that this particular paragraph in 4B is a deviation from what's contained in FIC. I think that's a starting ground. And then the question that you put to Frank was then, why did you agree to it? And we didn't really get an answer to that. We didn't.
Yeah,
no, we didn't.
Please.
So I don't need Frank to say why he agreed to it. I just need Frank to say he believes it's constitutional.
Put the question directly to you. Can you answer?
That is my view is that it is constitutional because the safeguards are there, namely that it must be a objective or as far as possible an objective formulation of an opinion that it's necessary to go in, that is no time to get a warrant, and that getting a warrant will defeat the object of the search. So when one puts that in legislation itself, a court can review the exercise of that authority given by Parliament to the inspector and find whether the inspector has exercised that authority correctly or not. What would make the act unconstitutional if Parliament does not write those safeguards in there? If we just say to inspector, if it's your opinion to go in, that would be unconstitutional.
Okay. Whilst, once again, I can understand why the need exists, else every criminal is going to set up in a private residence to protect himself. If the constitutionality is an issue, perhaps we can consider just limiting the right to enter a premise without warrant if it's a private residence. You know, so that whenever it's a private residence, we've got to make a plan to get a warrant. But for a business premises, if there are all those other safeguards are there, they can still go ahead without a warrant. Potentially that might help.
What is the National Treasury's response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I just put the thing in perspective? I completely agree with Advocate Jenkins. So you have a step up here. You have to go with a warrant. But now, if you look at 137.1, the first thing you can do, and that's always the first thing you must try and do, is try to get permission, consent. Failing that, the investigator on the scene must get the authority of the head of the financial sector regulator or a senior staff member before he can go in. And this is only in cases where you believe evidence is going to be destroyed. This can't be the standard operation now. This is only those cases. If you cannot get that guy that you need to get on the line, and you are literally, so we're talking about very rare and extreme cases, but it happens. You're literally looking at somebody who's about to take his laptop and throw it in the pond, and that's a real example, then the investigator, only then can he go in and safeguard that evidence. So this is not an everyday occurrence, and you have to tick off all those boxes, and as Jenkins indicated, if you cannot tick it off, that evidence becomes inadmissible, which is a heavy remedy for it. So this has happened quite a few times in the past, so although it's rare, we just say for those occasions where the investigator is literally looking at somebody who is about to destroy the evidence, like happened in the Fidentia case where they were watching the inspectors on CCTV and they were destroying documents selectively as the inspectors were doing their work. That's the only thing that this applies to.
Chair, does it sound better if you said by him what I was saying?
The decision. Yeah, what is the decision now of the committee? Sorry?
You see, Chair, David says it's unconstitutional and you need to test that. We should not test the act itself, but to test whether is it true that what David is saying is constitutional or unconstitutional. That's the gist of the matter.
Why are you so obsessed with David this morning? I mean, really.
Because he's the man who's delaying us all the time because he can't understand this thing.
No. Mr. Mania, do you want to say anything on this Tandi's behest? She insists you say something. Right. Have you said it's unconstitutional? Can you speak into the mic, please?
Chair, in a private conversation with my colleague, which is no business of the other member, I said the point here is not whether the FSB requires the power. I understand the rationale, and it's been eloquently put with a practical example. The question is whether it is constitutional. That's the question.
And they've answered it.
Advocate Frank Jenkins assures us that it is constitutional, but we have to bear in mind, at least on my reading, that the President viewed a similar clause as being unconstitutional, and the result of that was a five-month delay in processing a very important piece of legislation. So that's the context.
Now, here, I think we must go by the... Yeah, and also that I can't say this thing in the public domain about why what you're saying doesn't apply in this case, but I think you know what I'm saying, right? So can you please, in your private conversations with Alf, whisper? It'll save us some time. Yes, Brendan?
I'll take it easy right on the back of
Mr. Chair, I would suggest the National Treasury and the FSB to consider the following, what David just mentioned. The potential delay. Only the Constitutional Court in the end can decide whether it is constitutional or not. Would it not be better than wiser to get the Act through without any issues and then to bring an amendment bill immediately thereafter, which can then be subject to later delays, just to put in that type of clause. That's something that they must maybe consider. If there is any risk of constitutional...
I just put exactly that to you in response. I've been saying it twice now. So now, Brandon, firstly, you're trying to impress David, right? And I'm sure he's very impressed. But to come back to the point, can we just have a quick response? Colleagues, it's now 11:54. No more banter from the chair. Starting with the chair, I'll behave. Right, I'm going to be very precise and concise. Can you reply quickly, please?
Yeah, Chair, look, Bill, I think we hear the arguments and the concern of delay and so on. And I think in the interest of that, we can pull it out for now and play safe so that the bill can get signed. We'll look at separately how this power comes in, you know.
Give some clarity. Are you withdrawing only this one or all the ones that you've changed yesterday? Or only this one?
No, I think let's go clause by clause.
Because, all right, yeah. So what are we withdrawing? Let's be clear. Which particular provision?
The CC, right? That's just...
In one...
Sorry?
37.1. Yes.
Right, we have... Colleagues, can we all be on the same page, particularly older people like Derek? 137? MP? 137?
I just want to get the correct reference. There's so many different... It's a small CC, 37.1... A small CC.
Right, which page are we talking about?
It's on page 6 in
page
the...
Page 6, yeah.
There's some deletions there.
We're looking at the 29th of May document, right?
Yes, Chair. It's on, I think, on the fifth line of page 6.
Yeah, there it is on the top there. Starting with if investigator believes.
Yes.
We're removing CC.
Yes, Chair. There's also just consequential references to that we have.
To that at the bottom. Right. Yes. Now, can I get some clarity? Are we removing only CC?
Yes, Chair.
Good.
And
then we will remove references to CC under 4B.
Yes.
Okay. So, can we then agree? Sorry, Brandon.
Sorry, I'm just putting out there. Maybe they don't have to withdraw CC. Just limit CC to anything other than a private residence, because the right to privacy is much stronger when it comes to your private residence. You know, so they can still, if the guys are like, for instance, Fidentia, they were in a commercial operation. You know, in many cases. So you know, it's my.
Maybe.
So you know what Brandon is raising? A very important...
I'm really not sure what is in my colleague's water this morning. I mean, really. But, Chad, we're proposing an amendment. I would just like to know or to get a perspective on what the consequences of that are. I mean, we've been given the computer in the pond scenario. If we were to delete this clause completely and to remove that power, what would the consequences be to the FSB? My primary concern is the inner sanctum and the private residence, and I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean,
I'm feeling a bit like that, Mr. Maynard, to be fair. Right. Miss Pocolo, please. Tobias.
You see, Chair. You see?
Now, moving fast.
No, Chair. No. You see? I explained over again, even before the legislation went to the NCOP, that we want to equate such as that are done in private residences with such as that are done in professional businesses. What applies in professional businesses is different with what the investigators do in a private residence when they apply an element of surprise. But Brendan has raised an issue that we might want to consider. That because an illegal activity was taking place in a professional business, what then happens in a private business? How do you apply your mind as an investigator that crime is being committed at that conjunction. I'm saying let's apply our minds to safeguard the prescripts of the Constitution, to get a wording that would cover the FSB not to be found wanting as and when the Constitutional Court re-look into the matter when investigators have gone in. Because remember, even if the legislation is adopted now, it's when the action happens and when litigation takes place that the review will take place by the Constitutional Court and look whether there was reasonability in the terms of the application of the action by the investigators, right? And there we want the legal experts to apply their mind. And we don't have much time, Chair. They must do it as fast as they can. So that the wording that applies in CC and in 4 must be consistent when we adopt it. I don't have a suggestion, but I thought David wanted to bring a suggestion. Because there is not a policy matter, it's a principle that will need to be legally sound.
So if I understand what you're saying, you're agreeing with the Brandon Mania approach, is that what you're saying?
Either way.
Yeah, okay, no, you either agree or you don't agree, but if it's in a way, then explain in what way.
In a way that when that reasonability that they're applying must pass the constitutional master.
Obviously, then you're agreeing with them, and then it's fine. Can we move on? Can you reply to
Chair,
that?
Yeah. No. I don't want you to misconstrue my point. You know I believe in an element of surprise, right? That's me. I believe in that. I don't want to remove it.
No, we understand, Tandi. We understand. At least I do, and I'm sure those who've been sitting with you for hours and hours know. Right. Please.
Chair, I think, look, I was just talking to the team behind. The power is still there. All this means is they must phone their boss. Okay, so, it is a split second issue. I'm not sure, if you didn't get the computer might end up in a pond. but I think that let's remove CC because and I don't think members need to feel. Yeah, I think that I think that the committee is looking at and being cautious. And I think that we can live
so
with
I
that.
Want to suggest, colleagues, before you speak, Tandi, we have to move on. On balance, I'm stressing, would it not be reasonable, in the circumstances we find ourselves, that we forego CC, which is not to preclude, after further consideration, you coming with a separate amendment at some appropriate stage? Yeah. Right. Tandi, in reply to that?
Chair, I don't want to drag this issue, but I don't want us to make a mistake where we find ourselves that we've disempowered the inspectors when they see his evidence and this person is spreading it now and then, and he's trying to call the boss and the boss's phone is ringing and there's nothing that they can do because the boss is not answering the phone and they can seize this now. Chair, the application of the law in practicality is not as palatable as when you legislate, because they can justify in a court of law why they've done it, and they can still win. And if the Constitutional Court believe that they undermine the constitutional rights of an individual, they will still reverse that decision. Let's not be so rigid.
Anybody else wants to say anything? Nope. So we're going the route of deleting double C altogether. Okay? Thank you very much. So can we move on? I understand the complexities, but we also have to be real. You want this bill voted in the House next week.
Yes.
I'll just alert you, I think the last sitting day is the 15th, right? Am I right, Alan? Oh, yeah, no, they won't allow. What I was told by, I've been negotiating, I have informed them, Mr. Mania, I hope you won't change. It's a declaration, right? So they said, fine, they'll do it next week, and we have to find a date, right? So what I'm saying is if we don't vote on this bill by tomorrow or by Friday morning, then it's going to be deferred till August, right? So that's the call the committee can decide. Treasury, I don't know if you're happy with that, but I'm just alerting you that's a possibility. So when members are engaging and raising fundamental issues, which we have in different ways, address in the millions of hours we spent, it is your right as a majority to decide. I'll have to submit. But the consequences are what they are. Right, warrants on 138B, colleagues, on page 7. Is there anything, Advocate Jenkins, before I come to MP quickly, is there a deviation from anything from the FICA Act amendment?
Yes.
Right. What is it and why?
There was an issue.
Can you help MP in the meanwhile? We're looking at 138.1. On page 7. Am I right? That's where we are,
yes,
colleagues? Good?
Yes, Chair.
Yeah. What's the issue there?
It's the ground on which the court can grant, or a magistrate or a judge grant a warrant. In the FIC, we had three requirements where there was only one in the FSR bill, so we proposed that the two that's in the FIC be added.
So in fact, what you've done here is made it consistent with the FIC,
yes.
Eh? So here there's no deviation. Okay.
Yes.
Now, can you tell us where exactly you've added, what are the two extra criteria?
Okay, so this is now under the separate document that Janine
okay.
brought. The one is that you must show that it will yield information relevant to the contravention. And the second part is that it's necessary to enter that premises to for purposes of the investigation.
Right, so let's not vote on this. We'll come to the separate
okay.
page, right? Okay, so here the issue isn't anything but becoming consistent with the FICA Act amendment. But let's go clinically through it so that we, you know, in an organized way deal with the amendments to lot. Right, 140, so we're not voting on 138, right? Right. Then can we go to 141? Sub 1 is... I checked all the cross-referencing and all that. No, not here, actually. Page 66 only I've got. Page 66 of what? Oh, the original act. Right. Okay, good. What is it here that people want to raise on 140 sub 1, page 7? Any issues here? Any deviation? No, good. Frank, you fine with it? Okay, we're voting on it. One, yeah? Sorry?
There's a small deviation where the word supervisory is added in.
Are you doing it?
Yeah, but you should alert us.
See, that wasn't
but
done now. It was done.
Done. Yeah, it's done in the 29th of May version.
No.
Sorry? No, we're not looking at that document anymore. It's been scrapped. Please, can you tear the document? Okay, let me do this. Right, there is no other document here. Plus, I can't, well, 61-year-olds can't read it. We're not like Derek Hanekom here. We are just normal 61-year-olds. Now, can I raise this thing? 141. Have you made any changes to this in your amendments to? No, right? Amendments to this, right? So we can vote on that. 141B. This is exactly as it came from the NCOP, and there's no deviation here, right? So can I tick this off, unless there's something new? Good. 141C. Nothing there. Yeah, and I checked the cross-referencing there, right? Then look at sub 2 on page 8. Is there any issue here, Frank, MP?
No.
Can we vote on that?
Yes.
Good. Right. Now can we get the amendments to? Where's the page, please? Now, can you help here, Zakele and Antonia, right? You've noted all the ones that we have to. So if we miss anything, will you help me? Alan, will you help? So, can we go back now to the May 29 document? We're looking at 132. And it was, from what I can see here, Zakele and Antonia, will you just, I can't see you, right? So you'll just say, speak into the mic as and when necessary, right? And Alan. So we're asking Advocate Jenkins, Zakele, Antonia, and Alan to help here as a technical support staff. Right. 132.1. Now, can you explain, MP and Janine, what you've done here?
Chair, this is the requirement that before you they inspect a private residence, the FSR will require consent, and that's the only possibility of entering a private residence. But in the select committee amendments, they only require the consent of the occupant. So what we added is the person in apparently in control of the business, which is in line with the FIC provision.
Anything else to add? Anybody else would say anything from the team? Can you speak into the mic, my friend? Oh. What did he say?
It's just clarifying whether it's and or, but it is and in FIC, that you need the consent of both.
Fine. Now, can we have something from Jenkins? Anything you want to say?
No.
You're fine with this?
As we discussed.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that it's clear and simple and like normal process for 20 years, can we actually comment? I think, Alf, you had some issues. Not anymore.
I don't, Mr. Chairman, but just the end is an interesting one, because if there is... What is the distinction between a person apparently in control and the occupant? If the one... I mean, the way I would understand it, you've got someone who's at the gate, got the key to the gate, and he's apparently in control. The occupant is someone who actually occupies the premises. So they arrive there, and the guy's there at the gate with the key. No problem. But the occupant isn't there. But it says and.
When we did the FIC, if I remember, it was, you know, it may be the guard who's apparently in control, or, say, a domestic worker who comes. But in addition, you need whoever is the occupant. So you need both. And, of course, this means that if the occupant is a person apparently in control, then you're doing two in one, right?
Right, so you're happy with it, Mr. Lees? Good. They don't need any help, don't you? Thank you very much. 137-1, you're going to have tea with him. Elf. Yeah, at times, yes. 137-1, right here. What's the issue? Explain, MP, you're deviating here from the FIC Act amendment.
No, we're actually aligning.
Aligning.
We picked up some areas. The first thing is that it indicated the premises may be entered at any time. And this is for all kinds of entry, with consent, with a warrant, or with the authority, internal authority. So we propose it be removed here, because if you look at 137.4, it regulates in detail when you can enter, and there's also, just to explain the Honourable Member's question about removing it here, we also say in a case where they enter with the authority of the internal authority, there is provision that it doesn't have to be necessary during ordinary hours. So it's in 137.4. So that's what we propose. And then the second part is just the same change that we made in the inspection clause, also for investigations where you require you're obtaining consent, that it also includes the person in control of the business.
Frank? Nothing to add. Okay, members? Good. Right. The last one, warrants, 138.1. What's the issue, MP?
This is the one where we also align with FIC, where we indicate the grounds on which a judge or magistrate may grant or issue a warrant. That we add, it's the first requirement actually is there, the triple double A, capital A, sorry. But the second two were not in the FSR bill, so we're adding that, or propose that we add that too in the investigation clause.
Right, any comments here? No? As far as I can see, those are the three issues. Zakele, anybody wants to add? Antonia, Alan? No? Eh? You're fine. Good? Right, so we're ready. Now the question is, where do we go from here? My own sense, if I may. Okay, let me hear people. Right. Alf, when do you want to vote on this bill?
Chairman, have you forgotten about my issue?
Yes, it is.
to the bill. Now we're coming to this. This you had requested, rightly so, and it's before us, separate item. On the bill itself now, when do people want to vote? Now the first thing is, we have to do a little report, right? Frank, you want to say something?
Sorry, Chair. Forgive me if I'm repeating something, but I don't want to get into trouble later. The issue in Clause 137, and we discussed it yesterday between Janine and MP and myself, because it's an investigation, it differs also from the FIC, and I don't know if we've discussed it. It differs in the sense that there's no reasonable notice given where it's appropriate.
Yeah.
We've discussed that.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
But I mean, you were saying
something new. No. I mean, it's there because it's a different kind of...
That's right. Yeah, that's how I understand it, but you are obviously raising it for some reason.
I'm just going through my list to see what...
Oh, fine. Okay, it's merely like fulfilling your... Yeah, very good, very good. That's what we want from the staff. That's great. Anything on our side? No. In that case, can I suggest that we need... I would prefer not to draft it, right, Frank? Please. Can you draft the report, a brief report, to explain the amendments, and especially the amendments to the amendments? Because the amendments come from the NCOP. It's really the amendments to the amendments. In fact, it's largely what we have done as a committee we deal with, right? And the reasons we've done it. Because in case, for whatever reason, some individual, as Tandi rightly points, has to bear with a clause here, he or she might take it to court. It may help that the committee is clear about why it did what it did. Also, there may be people who are looking, and by the way, the Financial Intelligence Center Act is still being contested, as you know, right? And I'm told certain things, and let's see where it goes. I think, Momo, you know about it. No need to make it a big issue now. But what I'm saying is, in short, we need to explain what we did and why we did it. And make it very clear there was no underhand attempt to undermine any decision that we arrived at through the FICA Act amendment. So can you do a draft, send it to MP, Ismail as their team can look at it, I'd like to look at it. Now in that case, I think the House is sitting this afternoon, but there's no right voting. Does anybody know? So can't we meet around 4 p.m.? That gives us more time. Or you guys will have finished with your stuff, is that right? So we need a quorum. How many people? 7. We have a quorum right now, 2, 4, 6, 7. Right. Pinky's out. Pulley is out. So please, can we all come at 4 o'clock, G26?
Yes.
Good. So the draft of the report will be sent to you by 3 p.m. Can we meet as a team? Oh, okay. We're going to try to finish quickly because I've got to leave here.
Sure. As long as in principle the report explains the difference between the role of the investigator
yeah.
and the...
That will be key to the whole thing, right? If I understand. Frank?
Yeah.
Good? Okay. Yeah.
The question of my amendment to it's kind of like it, if it doesn't get talked about now, then it's gone. It's not.
Okay. Can I ask a question then? Are you raising this related to the financial sector levies bill as it applies to the FSR? Meaning, do you want to effect amendments to the FSR?
I do indeed.
Oh, right. Then the question that arises is, yes, that's what you did say. Eh? That's right. I'm sorry to be unfair to you. He's right. He did raise that. The question I want to ask you now, Advocate Jenkins, we'll have to listen to what his amendment is and see whether it falls within the parliamentary rules, right? So let's not take a decision about whether it's relevant or not. Let's look at the issue. Do you think we should do a briefing of the bill first, and then you can apply your mind whether you need an amendment to this bill that we have before us?
I'm very happy to do it that way.
Right, fine. No so problem. We will suspend now any final decision on the FSR bill until we hear this, and then your response. How about that? Good? Right. Okay, over to you guys. What exactly you want to take us through? It's the FSR bill. And tell us when you meant to table this bill. Well, thank you.
Right,
who's going to deal with that? A preview of it and all that. We have discussed this. Remember, colleagues? Yeah.
Chair, so last week, I think when we were asked, I mean, what we said was, remember, funding comprises two things, levies and fees. Okay. The levy bill will obviously deal with the levies and needs to be a money bill in terms of the Constitution. So that will come as a bill. But every year, what you need from the regulators is that they they may adjust the fees, or, I mean, most organizations do that on an annual basis. Even that is done in terms of normally a gazette currently, which but I think what we said is what we do want in both processes is an element of consultation. In other words, people can't just say this is it. But anyway, that's... Waiting. The point is, this is still a draft. We've not brought the bill, so it's still going to go through the process with you. I was just giving you an initial take.
I have circulated the same clauses that are on the screen are the same clauses the DA has circulated in its little document now. So I can explain what we had previously, and then we could, as that would be easiest, Chair. But I've also got them on the board. Okay, so Chair, so how the levies bill works is that there is a formula provided for in the levies bill which explains how we are going to levy individual institutions. So, for example, in the case of a bank, the formula is based on the liabilities of the bank, and what we do is we try and assess on an ongoing basis how the levies will increase over a period of time. We have given the regulators a little bit of flexibility in the sense that if their proposals on the changes to the levies increase by more than are not in line with inflation, then we provide for a kind of an ability for the levies to increase by inflation. So let's take, for example, the case of a bank. Currently we have a cap of 45 million on the fees, which is what we're going to propose to the committee in the money bill, of 45 million per bank for the purposes of prudential regulation. But let's say one of the banks is at 45 million and, you know, fee costs go up over a period of time, and so what we need to do is provide some flexibility to allow that 45 million cap to go up. So what we proposed in clause 239 of the FSRB, which I think we discussed back in the day, is for a mechanism for this to be increased over a period of time. And that mechanism really is that the regulators have got discretion to increase it by inflation and 2.5 percentage points, but if there's a greater increase in that, then they must actually propose a whole new, they have to go through a whole process of proposing a new levy, because we don't want to give them the flexibility to basically increase their levies over and over and over and over again. And so if they do make the proposal to increase the levies by more than inflation plus 2.5%, then they have to seek the minister's approval to do that. And that is in line with how we do other things in terms of the customs bill. So that's essentially how we've gone away, and I think we discussed this previously, but that's essentially how we go about doing it. So I think that hopefully answers the question that was raised previously.
Good. Anyone else add anything? Nope. Right. Over to members. Alf?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. It then does lead quite nicely into what I'd like to propose. You know, so if I may motivate and go for it. Alan has kindly handed out, and I know that people haven't had a chance to read, but Roy is a quick reader and has already read it. But, Mr. Chairman, the financial sector went into recession, I understand, from David yesterday. So it's not a very good position at the moment. But be that may. We've expressed concern about the costs for a long time. And no, I agree. It's not a DA particular position, but and Momo yourself last week I think it was said we need to monitor this very carefully, particularly as the system builds itself up into its final form. And so I was trying to see how we would do that monitoring. Essentially, that's what it boils down to. And so. When we go through, as Roy has just pointed out, there's no real mechanism for Parliament or the consultation. I think your consultation, Momo, is more with the industry rather than with Parliament, or you might have been putting words in your mouth. Let me not do that. You can speak for yourself. But in the bill itself, what I've tried to do is to pull it back into Parliament, away from just the minister. Now, chatting to Jonathan earlier, there might be my proposal might have some implications from timing aspects, which we would have to deal with. But what I'm trying to do here is two things. First, to pull it back so that Parliament or the National Assembly, I think I said here, can have the oversight over it. And secondly, that it doesn't become a whole new annual process, throw it in with the Rates and Monetary Amounts Bill. So that it's part of that process, and so you'll see the what's underlined there is what I've tried to achieve there, and what that does then it means that the rest clauses six that what's listed here 6, 8, and 9 I might have got my numbering wrong can be removed if we agree to put that in. What obviously would need to be done, I suppose, is some consequential checking to see what other changes might be necessary. So the bottom line is that the financial sector is suddenly in trouble, but I mean that's and we don't want to make things worse, so the costs need to be very carefully monitored. Momo has pointed that out to us, and I think we all agree on that. It's just simply how we do that monitoring, how we do that oversight. And that's what we've attempted to introduce here, is that mechanism. Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it at that. There is another, let me deal with it now. On clause 304, we just thought that it would be important to actually put it in these transitional arrangements that the minister, when he issues those regulations, must take into account the costs of implementation to business as well as the implications for financial inclusion. I think we've all agreed in previous discussions that at the end of the day the consumer is going to pay for these things. So it's nothing, I don't think it's of any, anyone could really, everyone can object if they wish to, but I don't see it as being a controversial, is the word I'm addition to that. Let's leave it at that, Mr. Chairman.
Two proposals, right, from you. Okay, Advocate Jenkins, can we consider them?
It looks like in my view, this is not something the NCOP dealt with. And as I said, the rules makes it quite clear that when we're looking at the bill coming from the NCOP, we're looking at the proposed amendments from the NCOP. That being the case, however, the Constitution says the committee considers the whole bill, taking account of the proposed amendments from the NCOP. The rules cannot override the Constitution. So it's really a matter of interpretation, but in my experience in Parliament, we've always looked at what the NCOP has sent us, and it makes logical sense for me, because otherwise we're going to deal with things that the NCOP did not have an opportunity to deal with if we put in new things, and it makes the whole bicameral system a bit of a pointless exercise thing.
Can I raise something? It's not about... It's not about the merits or demerits. Actually, the latter one makes... I can't presume what my comrades will say, but it makes perfect sense to me, at least. The former one, I have some reservations. I would tweak it. But so as far as the merits go, especially the second one, I mean, that's I don't think controversial. It's very consistent with our discussions. The first one is slightly more problematic, but we can always look at it. The question I want to ask is, Momo, is there a possibility? Look, can I suggest, colleagues, that we just tread cautiously, right? And the question that puzzles me, Alf, and because the way your committee works, I mean, your party works, is you're the shadow minister for both houses or what? Because I thought these things could have been introduced on the NA side as recently as 3 weeks ago, right? So I'm a bit puzzled why it didn't happen, but it's come to where it has. Yeah, no, it's fine. Because I don't think it's very controversial. Certainly the second one seems perfectly, eminently agreeable to us. The first one, we might have some issues about, you know, some of the things. But having said that, can I suggest, members, unless we feel strongly, that we just do what Parliament's always done, only look at the amendments that didn't matter. But there is a second thing we need to look at, Frank, is that, is there a way that we can look at the rules that give committees some latitude? Right, a specific rule. It's something I'll speak to Richard Imdakane, he sits behind me. We need to look at that, right? Because there are circumstances, like for example here, I know the DA may not agree with this, but we said, look, we're sick of this bill, right? It's reaching the end of the calendar year. Let's give it to the NCOP. And I did my job. I had 3 meetings with the chair and or the study group and said, we'll have a problem. Change the whole bill if you want, okay? Bring it back. And they didn't make more changes than is normally the case. But what we hadn't like thought through was what if in our second bite there are issues that we neither the NCOP nor I thought about. I just took it by the way. Because we on the ANC side felt we bored now. We need to move on. I thought you guys were going to, because I warned Charles that the DA is going to come with lots of issues that they raised in the NA side. And they were defeated on. I did tell them what they tried. They're going to come with lots of amendments, so prepare yourself. So I don't know what really happened between your one component and the other. But is there something else we can do? In other words, let's get a quick response on the content issues. What does the National Treasury feel in response to this? And then let's see if there's some other way in some other bill that's forthcoming where we can include this.
Yeah, look, I haven't seen the specific proposals, but I think that, you know, the way these things normally work is that it's done by gazette, okay, let's say the fees element. Nothing stops the committee from having a hearing on it, because when we put it out for public comment. Yes, so like all regulations, it can be done. I think what we've said is that this particular proposal, in the first 3 years or 5 years of this legislation, it's going to require your regulator to build up capacity. There's no way the regulator can now charge for doing things because they're not going to be able to do it immediately. So let's take the market conduct regulator. It's going to have to develop. It will be, it will probably take on many more staff, etc. And there will certainly be lots of hard discussions about what the charges should be to the industry. We've shown that certainly there are costs that's going to happen, and I think let's take it on an incremental basis, because it's when you put out the levies bill, Parliament will come in and have to approve it, and when you look at the fees and the annual budget of the Conduct Authority and the PA, that those documents will be put out, and I think that you can call them and have hearings. Yes, should Parliament have the power of veto? That's a different issue with all regulations. But, you know, it's not proved to be a problem, frankly, in my view. So But yes, you may want to check and balance. But I do think that the industry is also going to take advantage and try and obviously they're going to fight costs, even if it's for their customers. But there will have to be pretty hard discussions. So I'm saying we accept that the first 3 years, the annual reviews need to be more transparent. It needs to be put out there. I would encourage Parliament to have public hearings, or at least hear what's the issues, so that the minister can hear what's coming. Now, there's no 100% guarantee that the minister, whoever is the minister at the time, will either say, I'm still going to proceed no matter what, or hear. But I think this is a significant issue. It is going to hold up the bill. And I think this issue in any case can be discussed when we do the rates bill, because fees and levies go together. And this particular thing doesn't really, you know, whatever we say here, the way I understand it is the levies bill will actually can override that if it has a clause to override it, because only that bill can actually deal with the actual charges. So I would say, you know, just like we've been cautious with the FICA issues, and I know for a different reason, I think this issue will come up. When we have the levy bill, we're going to be talking about the entire funding, and we will have more information. So, you know, can we park this discussion for when we look at the levy bill?
Can the ANC members respond to the two issues raised? Okay, we don't have a mandated position, right? But colleagues, comrades, can I just say the second one is fairly straightforward. What it simply says is, you look on page 3 of the DA thing, it says, when performing duties or functions in terms of the section, the minister shall take into account the costs of implementation to businesses. That's fine. Even the most rabid Marxist will want to take that into account, because who does businesses finally transfer the burden disproportionately to their customers, right? So in defense of the working class and the underclasses, let alone in defense of capital in the case of the DA, in the case of the ANC, it's concerned with the poor and the disadvantaged. In the case of the communists, it's a concern for the proletariat, for all different reasons. We will agree with that, right? As well as the implications. Now, to make it more acceptable to us, Mr. Derek Hanekom, they say, as well as the implications for financial inclusion of all South Africans. Now, Mr. Derek Hanekom, if you don't know the DA, they're going to issue a statement tomorrow and on the eve of the election, saying we tried to get these things in, and the committee, they bludgeoned us, and they brought in Derek Hanekom to stifle us, and so on, right? So you can expect all of that. But the truth is, the second one, colleagues, what mandate do we need? I would suggest that, frankly, unless the study group decides otherwise, let's put it this way, that's reasonably and unusually for the DA acceptable to the ANC. That's my personal view. Fine. The first one, can I raise some issues? My personal view, which I'm just prompting, right? It's not because I'm not going to discuss it. I think the way it is there raises lots of issues, right? You have to get the whole thing and makes it becomes like a legislative thing into the rates and monetary, which is a clever way of bringing it in. But I think if you do that for this, there's a whole category of other entities or sectors of society. You'll also have to do the same. It may also apply to other bills and other laws before other committees. So I'm a bit cautious about this one. However, if the members want to, and this is something I would say, that you can think about. In the report to Parliament, there is no crime. Just table it. That, look, this came, but we could not proceed with it, and we think at some appropriate stage, in maybe looking at the levies bill, we can consider it. We can just state in two paragraphs that, you know, we can ask the DA to draft. Let's not make it a DA issue. We can just say the committee considered this, you know, and it is something that we could not proceed with, because of the rules, and that we give serious consideration to the one and give further consideration to the other. What is wrong with that, comrades? or shall we drop it altogether? I'm guided now, we must take a decision. It's not in the Freedom Charter, we don't need a huge study group meeting.
Just be clear, what are we giving serious consideration to, and what we actually don't... Yeah.
Because quite frankly, if they had raised it before, or in the NCOP, they would have probably gotten away with the one on page 3, which is that we give serious consideration to sub-clause 3 there on page 3, and further consideration to 6.
What I wanted, I mean, if you know, you expressed your view on 3, on the last one, so why are we giving it serious consideration? Are there any objections to it? I would say no.
No, but you see, the thing is that we are like, we haven't got a study group meeting. And we could do one very quickly at 1 o'clock in my absence, and you can decide. Yeah. But all right, fine. If that's what do other ANC comrades feel?
What I'm suggesting is, I mean, if any of the party that I belong to, namely the ANC, feel that this is not okay, or they want a discussion, then
they can raise it. Yeah, we do that.
But if they haven't indicated that they're, like, for myself, I don't think there's any problem with it.
Yeah.
But if anyone does, then we can.
Yeah, I think we don't need to study. Can I say that's fine, man? Really, it's just that we can't do it, Alf. But that's fine. Very naughty, you could have introduced it earlier, but that's between you and your shadow minister. On the other one, Derek, it's quite complex. But we must give... There's nothing wrong, Derek, because there are times when, starting from the first five-year period, when you are having an easy time in the executive, parliamentarians, the chairs of committees in particular, felt very strongly. And Frini Jhunjhunwala came, just to brief you, right, very quickly. Frini Jhunjhunwala came to us, and we had a meeting with chairs, and she says, you know what is happening? I'm not saying it applies to you, I'm teasing you. Members of the executive were the senior officials. Remember how sophisticated that lot was. They were all comrades, right? Very sophisticated, right? Inexperienced, but very politically sophisticated. So what they would do is, if a committee, like jettisons or rejects or substantially amends a clause, what they would do is, they would have, like under regulations, the same thing brought back, gazette it, and we fast asleep here, and they get it done. So then Frini came to Parliament and first met the committee chairs in this very meeting, in this very hall, room. She said, why are you people not doing your job? And she came with these lawyers and so on, right? And we all, well, those of us who are more experienced chairs, we remember that. And I can tell you, in all the legislation that we've been involved in, like the municipal systems, we never allowed Sydney to have his own way. We said everything must be brought to Parliament, right? Not Sydney, the minister. So in short, I don't have a problem with the thing in principle. We need to look at its merits, and we've got to hear Treasury. So that's why I say further consideration. So can I understand you, Momo, rightly? Nothing precludes us as a committee looking at clause 239, the new sub 6, as Mr. Alf brought it, in the levies bill. Right? We can look at it there. Or in some other appropriate bill. Am I right about that?
Yes.
The report will give further consideration. Okay. I will draft those sections, Advocate Jenkins. Good? Are we done? Yeah.
Just for clarity, sir, are we saying that the small amendment, the transitional one, are we going to put it in now?
We can't.
Old point, we can't. But we're putting it in our report.
So the fact that I wore my grey jacket to indicate a grey area that the legal advisor indicated to us about the Constitution giving us the right, we're not going to do it.
Well, I think we're saying no just for the reason of the rules. But what we are saying is maybe we put in a clause. Can you draft a clause, right, Advocate Jenkins, that says the committee would like the Rules Committee to look at this matter further, to allow some latitude, limited though it may be, consistent with the Constitution, for a committee in a Section 75 bill. Just think about it. If you can come with a drafting that's not going to be controversial, can we do it? Or I write a letter to Richard Mdakane based on a text you give me, and we look at it. Whatever. So can we leave that to you, Advocate Jenkins? You're looking like distracted. You're sort of fine. You're looking unhappy. Or am I listening? Fine. That's done. Okay. Sorry? Okay. So, are we done now? Is there anything else? No. So, meeting at 4 o'clock at G26 or some similar venue like here, you will send the SMS out. Can we meet quickly, the teams? So, that's the one issue. Now, let's move on to another item, which is the program. Now, I've been trying to persuade the Health Committee to come next Wednesday so we can have a response on the sugar beverages tax. I hope people listened to the radio this morning. Aaron Matsulere was there in full force. I only heard half of it. He was fantastic. But anyway, so now they, I think, feel that it's the last week of plenary sittings and they can't forego their Wednesday. So on Tuesday, we can't change it because we've got four committees, right? It was a nightmare to do this on the Money Bills Act. So I'm saying, I hope Momo's listening, can we have a reply in the first instance on the non-HPL issues, right? And we proceed with that, and we finish that section. On the SBT, if I can persuade, it's so HPL, if I can persuade Comrade Lendelwa, we will meet and do what the program says, right? It's finished the, we'll finish, start looking at their response, the stakeholders reply, and then they reply. So are we on the same page here? Yeah. Can I repeat? Are members okay with this? That you come and do your rates and monetary bill reply in the first instance, because we can do that as a finance committee, on the issues that affect the finance committee alone, like the three submissions we received at 2 o'clock yesterday, on the relationship between SARS and Treasury and information, on the dividend tax and so on, right? That we can go ahead with as finance, so that we meet Wednesday, you'll reply to that. If we can persuade the health committee to come here, then we deal with the whole rates and monetary bill. Item one. Item two will be the whole thing, right? Right. Now, that means you have to let the stakeholders know by this afternoon, because some of them have to fly in and so on. If we can't, then we proceed clause by clause, and finish the non-SBT HPL sides. We're not just going to hear them. Those people have a chance to reply. You reply, we move ahead with the bill. Let's finish it, that part. On the health promotion levy, you see, some of these committees are using committee weeks to go on study tours in the country and all that. So I'm trying to twist their arm to at least come the following week, or the week after. Because we plan to sit right till the 29th of June because we've got insurance bill as well. Now, what is worrying me is the program might change again. Because if tomorrow the weather is as bad as it may be made out, we might not even be able to proceed with the budget. Who knows? So they may have to find another slot in that week. So can you leave it to me to negotiate, with an understanding that we may not be able to have a joint sitting next Wednesday, but we are going ahead with the finance parts of that rates and monetary bill. Right. Now, on the issue of bringing the four committees together on the illicit financial flows, with a focus specifically on action by the SAPS stroke Hawks, Mr. Menya gave a lot of questions, and Zakela gave me a lot of questions. Yeah, yeah. So basically, we're still keeping the door open because we're going to have a very clear meeting where the questions are mostly up front and you can ask further questions. If you have any more questions, can you let us have it by, what's today, Friday noon? Okay. Any other questions on the program?
Because the date of the 21st June for illicit flows is not going to suit many of us.
What's
because
happening?
We have to go to FATF. And
no, you must go to FATF. We can't change
that. But
it
will mean the FIC leadership will not be here. It's a huge delegation that goes.
God.
So it will affect... I'm saying a lot
all
of
right.
the people you get for illicit...
Let me try to swap that around. Now start the negotiations all again. All right. You should have alerted us earlier. We give you the programs like weeks ahead. This date was there about 6 weeks ago, right? But fine. Okay, so I'll start the whole process again. Yeah, we can't have it then if you're not here. Okay, anything else? Good, thank you very much. Can we meet as the teams that must finalize this? It's MP yourself, Advocate Jenkins, myself. Thank you all. See you, hopefully, never again this week. Oh no, we've got to meet at 4 o'clock just to vote. And no new issues, Tandy, please. Delegate your manager, I failed. Dismally.
Thank you.